Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to tonight's show. This is Mike Volin from Where's Obama's Birth Certificate.com. Mike Volin from Where's Obama's Birth Certificate.com. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We're going to have a really powerful show today, and I say powerful. We're going to have a lot of surprise guests, and we do have Lord Monckton standing by in the screening room. We did have some technical difficulties earlier. I accidentally disconnected with him, but he is back on. And I'm going to bring him on in a minute after I make a couple of announcements. Okay, don't forget, it's Where's Obama's Birth Certificate.com. You can hit the Contact Me button. It's Mike@Where's Obama's Birth Certificate.com. And my phone number is right in the middle of the website, 570-394-2570. Okay, I'm going to start off with a couple of announcements because I want to get right into the show. Okay, many of you know we went to OAS. I'd like to extend my thanks to Colonel Riley for putting up with me. I was all over the place, and he was gracious enough to give live interviews when I asked him to. We went back to Congress. We had direct meetings with reps, congressmen, face-to-face, sat down in their office. We gave out approximately 85 kits. The WOBC, that's Where's Obama's Birth Certificate crew, is still camped out somewhere in a secret location just outside D.C. Hey, guys, I wish I was there tonight. I know how it is, and I'll be back. I'd like to say thanks to David, Pam, Cheryl, and I'd like to say happy anniversary to Linda. I believe she's celebrating her 38th wedding anniversary. I'd like to, and I think it's actually today. I'd also like to thank Tom P. from California, Carrie. Great to meet you again, Carrie. I'd like to give special thanks to Harry T. from Arizona. We actually had a meeting with his congressman staff. And Tim from Washington State, who called me on the Obama phone. That's what we call the cell phone on the website. And we had a great conversation. I'd like to give a shout-out to thebirthareport.com, thepostandemail.com, Commander Charles Kirshner, ProtectOurLiberty.org, Eric Rush, EricRush.com, Mickey Booth, MickeyBooth.com, Martha Trowbridge, I know she's out there, she's always out there. I'd like to give a special shout out to Vicky, who's really been working behind the scenes. My lovely, reliable call screener tonight, the lovely Miss Ruth, as always. And I am done with my announcements. I had to write them down. There were so many, I didn't want to forget any. Okay, tonight's guest, and I'm going to go right to him in a minute, we have Lord Monckton, and I have a little bit of a bio here, and it's Christopher Walter Monckton, 3rd Viscount Monckton of Brenchley. He's known for his work as a journalist, conservative political advisor, UKIP political candidate, and for his invention of the mathematical puzzle Eternity. I just found that out tonight. Some of his career, Monckton joined the Yorkshire Post back in the early 70s, I believe 1974. He joined the London Evening Standard newspaper. Monckton has asserted that he served as science advisor to Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher during his years with the Number 10 Policy Unit, and that it was him, on the Prime Minister's behalf, kept a weather eye on the official science advisors to the government from the chief scientific advisor. Since 2008, he's toured Britain, Ireland, the U.S., China, Canada, India, Colombia, South Africa, Australia, delivering talks to groups related to the subject of climate change. 2009, 2010, he was invited on four occasions before Congress to testify by Republican representatives, and on March 25th, 2009, he appeared before the U.S. House Subcommittee on Energy and Environment. Once again, he was one of Margaret Thatcher's policy advisors. He's published a few works here, The Laker Story. I believe he co-hosted that with Ivan Fallon. Angelic in Orders, Null and Void. I have to read that one. And The AIDS Report, published in 1987. Okay, I'd like to thank Gary for connecting me with Lord Monckton, and that was great. And I've wanted to get him on the show here, mainly because the way he speaks, no holds barred. You can actually have a conversation. Even if he doesn't agree with you, he's going to let you finish your sentence, your thoughts, come back with a reply, a gentleman's reply, as I like to say, and tell you the facts and give you what he knows and what he believes to have to be the facts. And I just realized something tonight. I had several conversations with Lord Monckton over the past several days, and we do have a common friend and acquaintance. I've never met them, but that would be Rose Tennant, and I remember him speaking with Rose Tennant. Okay, with that, and without further ado, across the pond where they drive the cars on the wrong side of the road, I'd like to say welcome to Where's Obama's Birth Certificate, Lord Monckton.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for attending. I know it's late in the evening out there. Actually, it's probably past midnight.
It's 1 in the morning.
Great. Okay. I spoke to you earlier this week, and we had corresponded previously, and I asked you to come on. And I'm going to announce you as my unofficial, official advisor on the Sheriff Kits. I hope that's fair. I know you're aware of them, and I know you've downloaded them, so I would think it would be fair to say that you actually have a sheriff's kit, and we were discussing different ways and tactics and why Congress is not acting on it, why they haven't launched an investigation, minus the few that I have on board, waiting on hold, so to speak, waiting to act. And with the I wanted to make one more announcement. This fits in here, too. With the growing scandals each and every day, there's more sheriff kits flying out the door. People are just stopping and saying, okay, I'm taking another look. I realize that we need to do something to try to get our government back, and I guess at this point we're going to start from the top down. Okay, with that, why don't you say good evening to the audience. If I forgot something in the bio, please go ahead and fill in the blanks.
Well, I think you've probably done a longer bio than I deserve. But I think why don't we start with the question why Congress hasn't done anything about this. And the reason is really very simple. And that is that despite all the activity in the civil courts, this is a criminal matter. And the only people who have any authority to do with criminal matters and sort the matter out are the prosecuting authorities. And because one of the potential guilty parties is Mr. Obama himself, the most powerful man in the world, naturally no mere district attorney can authorize any action in that direction. This has to be a state's attorney general. Nothing less will do. And I think the problem is that Sheriff Arpaio down in Arizona, who first began investigating this when 250 of his citizens turned up and banged the table until he agreed reluctantly to do so, is having some difficulty in persuading his state's attorney general to let him do the one obvious thing that would bring this to a head very rapidly, which is simply to go to the nearest federal district court down in Maricopa County, Arizona, which is where Phoenix is, and simply ask for orders requiring Hawaii to produce the original birth documentation for specialist examination by forensic experts under the care of the sheriff. Now, that's a normal criminal inquiry. Normally, a jurisdiction which had nothing to hide would welcome inquiries from police officers, such as Mike Zullo, who's the very talented lead investigator for the sheriff on this case and has been very dogged and determined over the years in persisting, often with not much encouragement from the Mark Stream media, for instance, but he has persisted. He's been to Hawaii, he's rattled the bars of their cage, he's been to check in with the police, then he went to the health department, tried to interview them there, they called the police and had him thrown out. Clearly, they have something to hide because they're not treating law enforcement officers with the normal courtesy and common sense that would be the correct thing to do in these circumstances. So, plainly, Hawaii doesn't want to cooperate, and the only way to make it cooperate is for the sheriff to go and apply for orders, but he can't do that. I mean, he has the power as sheriff to do that if he wants on his own authority, but clearly, in a matter as sensitive as this, he has to get, and as far as I can tell from admittedly some distance, hasn't been able to get the agreement of the state's attorney general to allow this to happen. Now, until this is concluded as a criminal matter by the investigating and prosecuting authorities, then Congress has no right to intervene. It could, I suppose, in theory, mount a criminal investigation of its own, but that's frankly not the best way to deal with this. It needs to be done professionally by the professional police authorities. And the reason why, that's one reason why Congress won't act, it is that this is not really a matter for Congress unless and until the public authorities have decided what they are or are not going to do finally to bring this to a head. The other reason, and I had this put to me very forcefully by a congressman who came to dinner with me at my club in Washington this time last year, I said to him, look, you've seen my own very detailed briefing on this. It's 20 very well organized pages that tells the whole story, shows all the documents, shows what's wrong with them. And I said, you've seen that, you've read it, and you know, having read it, that there is plainly, to put it mildly, some considerable doubt about whether the document that appears on the White House website and the other version of it, more high resolution, that was also made available at the time, are in any way genuine. It's really very clear that they're probably not genuine. Now, that being the case, and you being a Republican, I said to him, I won't name him, I said, why aren't you going to do anything about this? I said, this is the one thing on which the Democrats are very, very definitely vulnerable. They go around calling Mr. Obama Black Jesus. That's their name for him. He's the big hero of the left worldwide. So why don't you deal with this matter of the forged birth certificate and find out how much anyone in his office knew? We're looking at Hawaii Gate here. And he said, oh, no, he said, I'm not going to do that. He said, I have a very large majority. But he said, I only have that large majority by not rocking the boat. He said, the first person in Congress to raise this issue in a serious way, that will be the end of his political career. And I said, why? He said, because you know what's happened to you on the climate issue, where they realized you were a danger to them, they realized you were testifying in front of Congress, that people like me were listening to you very carefully, the Republican leadership generally listening to you very carefully, realizing that you'd done the homework and that the whole thing was rubbish, and that you were saying so in front of Congress. They then mounted a vicious and prolonged campaign against your reputation. And he says, they've trashed it. And he said, if you were in political office that depended on the voters, he said, you would now be out of office. He said, that's why we're all frightened to do anything, he said, because the left now, if you become a serious challenge to them, as you would if anyone seriously in Congress took this issue up, the left would come after you and come after you. They would spend millions to trash your reputation. Not so much for going after you as to frighten anybody else off. And he said, it's worked. This business of threatening people's reputations, he said, it was first done by the Nazis in the early 1930s. Anyone who crossed their path, at that time they didn't have the power to put them in prison or kill them or send them to gas chambers in Poland. What they did instead was to trash their reputations. That's what a dictator does. That's the first step towards dictatorship. You make sure that anyone who might speak out against you is cowed into terrified silence. And he said, they've done that to us. We're all terrified of the left now. And that's why nothing is done about this. That's why you'll see nothing in the newspapers. You'll see nothing from Congress. Everybody who values their reputation will not dare to raise this admittedly very serious issue. He said, of course it should be raised, of course it will be, it ought to be dealt with, but he said, I, for one, simply don't dare. I do not want my reputation trashed by the left, the hard left, the communist left. He was very clear about who they were and how much money they had. And I can give you one little illustration of that, if you like. In the climate field, which is what another thing I've been involved in, where some years ago I was asked by a bank in London to have a look at the climate issue, and I did them a report saying that I had thought there was a problem, and it now turned out on examination that there wasn't. And this then got published in the Sunday Telegraph. It was a very popular article. It crashed the website, in fact. I was then a marked man, and I began being attacked. And just before the 2009 climate conference in Copenhagen, I was in the United States in Minnesota, where I made a speech in St. Paul to the Minnesota Free Market Institute. 1,200 people came, and somebody filmed the closing words of that speech and put it up on YouTube, and it went viral. 2 million people had seen it in 2 weeks. I mean, it was the fastest YouTube platinum for any political speech ever. And then the numbers stopped rising, and I thought, well, everybody who's wanted to see it has seen it. But no, I got a phone call from Texas A&M University, from Earl Stone, who was then one of the professors there. He said that he had monitored the Internet, and I had been subjected to one of the most expensive attacks behind the scenes that he'd ever seen. And I said, what have they done? He said, they created 2 dozen bogus pages with the words Moncton Video in them somewhere, but the pages themselves were gibberish. They were exclamation marks and dashes and weird numbers and nothing that made any sense. And the idea was, anybody searching for the video, because somebody had said, oh, you've got to see this, just put in Moncton Video in your search engine and you'll find it, they would find one of these bogus pages. And I said to him, but, you know, any fool can concoct a bogus page. That's not particularly expensive or difficult. He said they did 24 of these pages, at least, that I've tracked so far. But he said the interesting thing is that those pages are detected first by the search engines before the page with 2 million hits on it. I said, well, how do they manage that? Surely the search engine will rate more highly a video that's had 2 million hits than one that's just a whole lot of gibberish. And he said, oh, yes, but you can pay to have your ranking advance. He said, that's where they spent the money. And do you know how much they spent? He said, I've worked it out. It cannot be less than $250,000 just to stop people seeing your video. And I was fascinated that somebody out there on the left, I mean, it's a huge organization that does this, was willing to spend that kind of money, first of all, to cut me off from getting access to the audience that would otherwise have seen it. He reckoned it would have gone to 20 million in the end. It would have been a phenomenon. It would put me in sort of pop star league. He said that's where it would have gone had they not stopped it. They were desperate that the information that was contained in that speech should not get out. And it was information about a very delicate matter of the UN trying to establish what is effectively a world government using the climate and the environment as an excuse. And I had read the draft treaty. That's exactly what it said. Several lawyers have looked at it since. They've all agreed with me that it was an attempt by the governing class worldwide to mount a coup which would have destroyed democracy everywhere. And I went public at just the wrong moment from their point of view, a few weeks before the conference began. And as partly as a result of that intervention, the treaty failed and it didn't pass. They're trying again in Paris next year. But the point is that they really didn't want it known that this is what they were up to. And so when I publicized it, they did their damnedest to shut it down. And one forgets just how much money the left now has. They now control the money bags. And so if they want to shut down this Obama debate, they control the media, and they have made sure that virtually nobody in the media says anything. Anybody who is savvy anyway wouldn't dream of touching this for fear of having his reputation trashed, just like those congressmen. So that's what we're up against. We're up against a very high level of organized corruption on the left worldwide, but particularly in the United States, which is now using institutional terrorism in the shape of bullying and destroying the reputations of those that disagree with it to make sure that sensitive issues like the Obama birth certificate never make it into the big time and never really get dealt with. And that is something which is very difficult to overcome. And as this program progresses, I think we've got 2 hours, haven't we? I shall be able to unfold to you how I think this should now proceed, given that the sheriff, I think, has been stymied by his attorney general not being willing to take the risk to his reputation, even though the facts are entirely plain. I mean, I can assure you from the knowledge that I have, and this now is, it's fairly old knowledge, it dates back at least a year, but the knowledge I have of the files on this and what they're looking at, and this is the knowledge which has all been made public. I don't know anything that hasn't been made public, and I haven't gone in and said I require special treatment or special information. But the information that I've got and have verified insofar as I'm able to verify it shows very clearly that I don't know, I can't tell you where Mr. Obama was born, but I can certainly tell you that that document on the White House website does not tell us where he was born. It is such an obvious and blatant forgery. And the extraordinary thing is that given that this is an important constitutional issue, because on 25 separate occasions that I've been able to trace, Congress has been invited to repeal the provision put into the Constitution at the insistence, as you may remember, of George Washington and John Jay, who was his nominee for the first Chief Justice of the United States. They were very determined that somebody who was alien to the United States and meant it harm couldn't become president and then hand the United States back to the British or destroy it in some other way. So they regard it as very important that the president of the United States should be an American citizen born and bred within the jurisdiction of the United States. And every time somebody has come along and said, this is outdated, we ought to do away with it, somebody else has said, no, but look at all the communists and the fascists and the other groups that mean America harm. We don't want one of them being able to send somebody from overseas and take our country over and do it damage. That's why that provision is there, and that's why it has survived. And it may sound to some like a mere archaism, like a mere anomaly, as something just old-fashioned that we don't really need anymore. But it is in your Constitution that the president has to be a natural-born citizen. And this is a man who, until shortly before it became clear he was going to run for president, was telling everybody he was in fact from Kenya and was born in Kenya. He got a foreign student's grant because he was born in Kenya. He held various posts at Harvard University because he was born in Kenya. And then suddenly it became no longer suitable to him to be born in Kenya. Then first a short form and then a long form, Mickey Mouse birth certificate, appeared. And you couldn't make this up, how bad it all is. And yet nothing has been done for these very powerful reasons that I've mentioned. One is that Congress can't act because it's a criminal matter. The other is that anyone who dares to raise this issue will have their reputation done over to the point where they can really no longer function. I'm lucky because I'm rather out of the center of things, have been for some years because of a long-standing illness, which I'm now over, but it sort of messed up my career, so I don't have a normal career. I can't be threatened by these people in the way that other people can. They can try to trash my reputation, but it doesn't make any difference to me. They know that, and they don't care. They'll trash it anyway, because other people will see my reputation being trashed, and they will say, we don't dare. Now, what really worries me about this aspect of it, which was so clearly brought out by that congressman to whom I talked, is that this is exactly what happened in pre-Nazi Germany. This was how they shut down dissent. A lot of people, looking at the early history of how the Nazis came to power, ask themselves, how could the ordinary people ever have allowed this mad, vicious regime to take over and eventually to rule absolutely after the Nuremberg laws had been voted in by the acclamation of the parliament at the time? And the answer is that anyone who dared to oppose the Nazi regime was treated by that regime, as far as their reputation was concerned, exactly the same way as Obama and the left worldwide are treating the likes of me today. It's exactly the same technique. It is fascism all over again. It's very, very difficult to deal with, but there is one way. in which it can be dealt with and should be dealt with. And that is through the criminal courts. And that brings me to the sheriff's kit. Now, the sheriff's kit is, in principle, a very good idea. But it isn't enough. It goes some of the way, but it doesn't go all the way. Consider, if you will, put yourself in the mind of a police officer sworn to do his duty and investigate any criminal complaint that is credibly brought to him. Somebody brings him a sheriff's kit and says, look at this. And he looks at it. And he says, yes, you know, there seems to me to be something about this here. But supposing then there's somebody else in his office who is a very strong Democrat, very strong supporter of Mr. Obama, who might not want a criminal investigation to happen. Is the sheriff's kit in the form that would be bulletproof against somebody sneering at it? And being blunt about it, the answer is no. What you need now, in order to make sure that a criminal investigation is mounted in a jurisdiction other than Arizona, where it has effectively been shut down for the time being, is you need to have a really well-compiled, well-organized, properly indexed, effectively it's got to be a fraud report. Now, let me talk a little bit about the law of fraud. It is clear to me, because I was called in on this 18 months ago by a firm of lawyers in Hawaii. I was asked to meet the sheriff, go through the evidence, have a look at it, and do them a mathematical report on the likelihood of this document being genuine. So I had a very close look at everything, interviewed the sheriff and his advisors, thought about it a lot, did some checking of my own, wrote up my own report on the whole thing, which was submitted, you know, privately to some people over here so that they knew what was going on, but was also made public and circulated, I think, to every congressman in the United States by people in the states who were concerned about this issue. And once I'd done that, I did my mathematical report, got it backed up by a professor of mathematics just to make sure that nobody could start sneering that, oh, Monckton doesn't have a piece of paper that says he's a mathematician, and put that in front of the sheriff. Now, that material is explosive because that material on its own, even where you don't have a single killer point that absolutely proves the document to be a forgery, but you have a lot of indicators that it is, then you can use what's called probability theory, and that's what I did use. And the professor, when he looked at my work, was fascinated. He said, I had no idea you could do this, you could use probability theory in this way. He said, I didn't know it could be used in this way. I said, well, in the fraud investigation industry, and I used to do this a bit for the British government in my day years ago, I said, this is how we did it, because you know, I've caught out a lot of people doing this. You work out the probabilities. You've got a lot of red flags, as they're called, a lot of indications there are things wrong. And you work out what is the chance that each of these things individually could be wrong by accident. Because if they're all wrong by accident, then they're unconnected with one another, and therefore you can multiply the odds against them together to find out what the odds are against the whole thing being genuine. Now, I did this, and there is a chance that the document on the White House website is genuine, but it's only 1 in 65 sextillion. And that's using very conservative numbers. And so it's very clear that the document is a forgery, but it's also very clear that none of this material that I have done, and quite a lot of the material that I haven't looked at, that isn't in your sheriff kits. There's an awful lot of stuff in there that shouldn't be there, which is rather political in its tone. And one thing that's very, very important about all this is that you shouldn't be playing politics here. Of course, one may have one's views about whether Mr. Obama is a good thing or a bad thing for America, but that is not the issue when you're looking at whether or not a document on the White House website is a forgery. There it's a straightforward criminal matter. It's not political. And so what you have to do is to put together, which, you know, I am now beginning to work on, a really cracking dossier of all the relevant paperwork, properly put together, properly indexed, all the political stuff taken out, all the dubious stuff, because there's quite a lot of stuff, you know, some of it even from the sheriff's office, which actually isn't very strong. And, you know, wherever I found something that I didn't think really stood up, I wouldn't include that in my probability analysis. I'm not going to put in anything there which I have serious doubts about, because that would be wrong. And, you know, some things I considered right which the sheriff's office thought might be wrong. And obviously, whenever you're looking at an investigation like this, there will be different views on things like this. What we are all agreed on is that there are so many things wrong with that document and, of course, all the associated documentation, that very plainly there is more than enough, and I mean already more than enough evidence to justify a federal district court, if properly approached by a state's attorney general, in granting orders for the production of the original documentation in Hawaii so that it can be forensically examined. And that's the most urgent thing to achieve now. There's been all sorts of distractions, people demanding that Mr. Obama should have DNA tests, etc., etc. Well, of course, a man who was totally confident of his position wouldn't hesitate to have all that done, wouldn't hesitate to allow Hawaii to show the sheriff's investigators the original documentation. But he hasn't done that because I think he realizes by now, even though he might not himself have actually known where he was born, he must realize by now that there is something a little bit fishy, more than a little bit fishy, about the document that he very foolishly put up on the White House website and then endorsed as his own birth certificate. And so I think he is now being very careful.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, he might not know where he was born until recently, when he probably started finding out and saying, hey, what's going on? Lord Monckton, I just want to cut in here for a minute. I have a caller here. I have a lot of callers. Randy, Mark, Gary, Johnny, hold on. This caller doesn't have a lot of time, and you may or may not know him. I just want to jump in here for 1 minute. And with that, I am going to bring Pastor Manning. Welcome to the Where's Obama's Birth Certificate.com. You're on with Lord Monckton.
Thank you so very much, Mike, for allowing me to listen in tonight and to say a word. And Lord Monckton, I have been a follower and admirer of you for quite some time. Your courage truly has inspired me, and your intellect and keen sense of our world today from so many facets has just been a blessing to so many of us. And I thought I would just say that tonight. This is my first time actually speaking with you, though you have spoken to me countless hundreds of times through your videos and other interviews that you've had. So thank you for sharing with Mike here tonight.
And well, bless you. That is very generous. I'll send you my usual $500 in the post afterwards.
And I would gladly accept. That would be great. But interesting, your perspective on Obama's own recognition, recollection of coming to being aware of he is a forgery, in a large sense, that he very well may not have known, and that the document he has presented, clearly he knows that is a forgery. But do you think that any attorney general or any district court will allow anyone to open the door for an examination, especially a forensic examination?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You see, in the end, the courts are sworn to do their duty, as are the police. And, you know, the sheriff of Maricopa County, when I talked to him, you know, I was wanting to see, was I dealing with some thick Republican redneck who wanted to make a name for himself bashing Mr. Obama. And I was pretty soon disabused of that notion. Here was a very good man, a much decorated senior cop of great experience, just re-elected, as you may know, to his office at the age of 84. That man is right on top of his job and right on top of his game. And he wasn't playing politics at all. He didn't want to do this. He didn't even want to look at it. But 250 of his citizens turned up and banged the table and said, look, there's clearly something wrong with this. Your sworn duty to us who elected you is to get off your wobbly bottom and have a look at it. And so he sighed and said, oh, all right, I'll give it to my cold case posse, which is a thing unique to Arizona, where cases that they can't really justify throwing any more taxpayers' money at, they can give it to individual private enthusiasts who have some background, who can then look at it and tell the sheriff whether there's anything in it and whether it's really worth putting proper detectives onto it. And so this went to the cold case posse, and after a week or two, the 250 citizens came back and they said, come on, we want an answer. So the sheriff gets onto the posse and said, come on, I've asked you to tell me that this is all a load of nonsense, and please can we shut it down and get on with real police work? And the answer was, well, we're terrorists, we're still looking at it. There are things that don't quite check out. And this went on for another month or two, and eventually the sheriff had to say to the 250 citizens that they were right. There did appear to be something wrong that required investigation, and it would now be investigated. So plainly, Pastor Manning, there is something terribly wrong with this.
Well, let me ask you one further. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Let me ask you one further question. I promise not to trouble you any further. And that is this. This is a complete forgery. We have a person who is wholly and completely ineligible to hold the highest office.
Well, he may or may not be eligible, but certainly that document doesn't establish that he is.
Well, what will happen if we go forward and no court gives us an opportunity to adjudicate? What kind of a government do you perceive, and I really reserve this question for you, that we could have with a foundation of laws and edicts and legislation done by a person who should not have held office in the first place, that
right.
America was...
Well, here's
was.
The thing. If I can just complete the admittedly rather long answer I was giving, and it has to be a long answer. The fact is that it is very clear that somebody has committed a serious criminal offense of forgery. I mean, if this is a forgery, then it is potentially the most influential, expensive, and catastrophic forgery in the history of this
yes.
unhappy crime. And
yes.
that means that provided that the evidence which I have seen is properly organized and put together and presented, and provided that then citizens from every jurisdiction that may be listening to this and other similar broadcasts get hold of copies not of the present sheriff's kit, which is not, if you'll forgive me, effective for its purpose, but a much stronger document properly put together by somebody who has himself investigated frauds at government level, which is what I've done, then if the police are given that and if they are approached in the right way by their citizens, in the same way as it was done in Arizona, where 200 of them got together and ganged up and went to the sheriff so he couldn't ignore it and he couldn't say no. Now, at that time, they didn't have terribly well-organized evidence. We do now. And if that were now put by serious citizens to the police in each of their jurisdictions, it only takes one jurisdiction where one policeman says, yep, I'm going to do the right thing. And the whole thing will become unraveled. An attorney general will then eventually say, yes, of course we'll have to grant you the authority to ask the Federal District Court to have a look at the original documentation. And the Federal District Court, if it sees the same evidence that I have seen, will have no choice, regardless of its political opinions, but to allow order Hawaii to produce the documentation for further forensic examination. You see, the fatal mistake made by those who've tried to pursue this as a civil matter in the courts is that it isn't a civil matter anyway. And in any case, they were asking the courts effectively to say that Mr. Obama isn't the president. Now, we're not at that stage yet. We're at the stage of trying to check out that apparently bogus document. So the correct orders to ask for, which are proportionate to the matter at hand, are orders that Hawaii should produce to the sheriff's investigators the documentation that's original, the birth certificate, etc., so that it can be properly checked out. Now, that is a proportionate, commensurate order. No court in the land, given the enormous weight of evidence that there's something wrong with this document, could refuse to grant such an order. But until we can find a state's attorney general who will authorize one of his police departments to make that application, the question is never even going to get to the courts. And so the sole objective of having sheriff kits, which is why it's so important that this initiative is transformed so that the sheriff kits are made as strong as possible, the sole objective is to make sure that the police are empowered by being given a head start by really well-organized material right from the outset, so that then, when they have to decide internally, do they face the potential ruin of their careers in taking on a subject like this, given the way the left behave, they can then say, yes, we will do it because it is our duty. And it only takes one police department somewhere, and then the whole case unravels.
Thank you so very, very much. And Mike, thank you so very much for the work that you do as well. This is a great interview tonight. Just a great catch to have Lord Mocton on, explaining in detail. And quite frankly, you know, we have kind of been going at this the wrong way. He has outlined what we really ought to be about. And so I pray this word gets out effectively. Thank you, Mike.
And that's
God
why
bless
he's
you.
On
Thanks
the show.
Very much.
Reverend, how can people get a hold of you? And what do you? And really quick, what do you have planned for July?
We are planning a racial reconciliation and healing meeting at the Gettysburg Memorial Military Park in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, where over 50,000 soldiers died in one day in one battle during the Civil War period. And we're calling people to come. Racism had just about died in America. It was still some strands around, but it was gone, and most of the race baiters and race temps were going broke, including the NAACP, until Obama came on the scene, and it has exploded. It's 10 times worse now in America than it was then, and so we're bringing black folk and white folk together. We're bringing Americans together, and I stopped calling those designations myself, but we're going to bring Americans together from different perspectives, and we're going to leave Gettysburg with a renewed sense and commitment of unity in this nation, and that we shall not be a divided people, and we shall not let people divide us. We're going to heal our wounds. We're going to correct areas that we need to correct in order that Almighty God might use us as a people. That's going to happen at Gettysburg. I have been charged with the responsibility of organizing it. It's going to happen on the 4th of July all day long. It's going to be a great meeting. You're going to be one of the speakers there, by the way. Mike, you'll be on task to come up, stand up at that beautiful peace monument and express your input and concern for our nation, that we need to take our nation back from Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and all the others that have participated in the destruction of our nation. So I'm glad you're going to be a part. You've consented to give your voice to that process. And if people want to find out more about me, they can go to our website at atlah.org. That's A-T-L-A-H .org.
And you're on the air Monday to Friday, 3 to 6 p.m., I believe?
3 to 6 p.m. 3 to 6 p.m. And go to our website, and you can log on to the – it's called the Manning Report. You can Google it, and it's right there.
Well, Pastor Manning, I'm fascinated by what I hear. I do congratulate you on that initiative, and I imagine that that memorial at Gettysburg is at or very close to the place where President Lincoln dedicated a corner of that battlefield so that they wouldn't have died in vain, and that
Absolutely.
The government of the people, by the people, and for the people should not perish from the earth.
Absolutely correct. It is, and forgive me for not making mention of that, perhaps one of the greatest political speeches made in the annals of history, and certainly in America, is where Abraham Lincoln stood, and we're going back to the same place. And we're going to pray that this nation, this government, shall not perish from the earth. It's just an exciting experience. I'm really excited about it. And it's going to happen on the 4th of July, one of America's greatest.
I ought to be there, oughtn't I?
Well, I'd love to have you come. If you can come, I'd love to put you up to say a word. It would be an honor to have your voice blended with the other voices that will be there. If you can come, please let me know.
Let me see what I can do. I can't promise. I may be able to clear my diary. If I can, I will.
Please, if you could do that, that would be a big boost to people like myself and Mike and others. We are struggling against the left and their powers, but your voice and your commitment to something like that would raise the standards highly. So please, if it's possible, please come.
Bless you.
All right. Okay, Mike, I'm going to disengage right now. I know other people are waiting to speak. I didn't mean to take over the microphone here, but it's just an honor to be here tonight.
I need to get more patriots like you on here. Thanks a lot, Reverend. Have a good night, and I'll be there standing next to you. Amen.
God bless you, sir. God bless everyone. God bless all of you. Good night.
Okay, that was Pastor Manning, atlah.org. I suggest you go to his site, The Manning Report. It's a great show. He's been on this subject. Lord Mocton, I want to move on with the calls right now because they're jumping in, and let's take a couple of questions, and then we'll get back to you. And I wanted to address something earlier. You had said that no representative wants to trash their reputation, and you're absolutely right. It seems like it's always re-election time, I just met with a congressman when I was down at OAS. I believe it was the 20th, the second day I was in Congress, where we handed out 85 kits. And we were in his office, and there was a group of us of about six. And he looked at me, and he said, "Mr. Volin, we know, I know, you're absolutely positively right about what you have here. The only problem is we can't do anything. You have to go back to the court." And then I politely said, "Well, we tried. Mainly the courts don't want to have any kind of, they don't want to let anybody in the door. It's always, we don't have standing, you don't have standing, nobody has standing. I don't know who has standing, even though we..."
Well, as I've tried to explain, the problem is that anyone who tries to make this a civil matter is likely to fail, because plainly this is a criminal matter.
Yes,
plainly,
absolutely,
the document is a forgery, and therefore raising it as a civil case is, there is one way and one way only of raising it as a civil case, but you have to have raised it as a criminal case first. Here's how it works. It's called judicial review of administrative action. It really began to evolve in the courts of equity in London in the 14th century. And it was a way of redressing the enormous imbalance between the power and wealth of the state and that of the individual citizen who might find himself in dispute with the state. So here we have a case in point, that the individual citizen would like the state to do its duty and investigate whether or not a criminal offence has occurred, and in that investigation, naturally, have sight of the original documentation and have it forensically examined. That's what the citizen would expect. That's what the public interest requires, setting aside all politics. If this is a forgery, that's the steps that you take to check whether it is a forgery or not. Now, if this matter were put properly in front of a jurisdiction, and if the police looked at it and referred it to the Attorney General, as they did, for instance, in Hawaii, and the Attorney General then, for political reasons, refuses to do anything about it, it is then open to the citizen, and only then, to mount a civil challenge, not to whether Mr. Obama is president or not. That's not the business of the citizen. That's the business of the police to check it out. But for the citizen to go after the Attorney General for failing to do his duty as an Attorney General and to make sure that what could be a very serious crime is properly investigated. And there, the citizen does have the right to go to the civil court. He does have standing and will be heard. But nobody's even tried to bring a case like that. You've got all sorts of wildly eccentric people trying to bring civil cases, all of them on a basis that if I were a judge, I would sling it out. And so it's very important that we now change gear in all of this and start doing it properly and start realizing that a criminal offense is what appears to have been committed here. We don't, of course, know by whom. And as we've already said, it may or may not be Mr. Obama. It may or may not be people on his staff who by now must have realized there's something wrong in the state of Denmark. But the question is, how do we now play this? The correct way, if you want to get standing in the courts, is to make sure that you do this as a criminal matter and you pursue it to the point where the attorney generals in various states realize they're not going to get away with not doing their duty and not allowing their police force to go and ask the federal district court for the relevant orders for the disclosure of the documents in Hawaii. And that's the way to play it. You have to focus. I told the sheriff this when I saw him a couple of years ago. I said, this is what you have to do. Stop messing around saying, well, we'd like to take Mr. Obama's DNA. You haven't got enough evidence to demand that of your president. You have to instead go and look at the original documentation. That's obviously the first place where a police officer would go and look. And, of course, they did subsequently go there and try to have a look, and Hawaii, of course, as expected, played very hard to get indeed, treated them in an unforgivably rude manner, and one which was possibly itself a criminal interference with a legitimate investigation. But the sheriff then wasn't able to follow it up by going to the Federalist Court to get an order, and that's really where it's got stuck, and that's where we need the sheriff's kit, and that's where we need them to be proper, and that's where we need citizens listening to this to be ready, because in a month or two I hope to have got the relevant documentation ready, plus instructions in exactly how to approach your police department so that it has to take you seriously and cannot dismiss you as frivolous or vexatious or merely political. You have to go to them in such a way that they realize that this is a serious matter, that you're not playing political games, you're genuinely upset that this Ford document should be staining the reputation of the United States because everybody around the world is laughing behind their hands at the United States, that, you know, it's Congress does nothing, the police forces do nothing, the attorneys general of each of the states do nothing, everybody does nothing because they're all afraid of the Obama left. They're afraid of the communists. They're afraid of having that reputation trashed.
And I couldn't agree more. And it's taken me all this time, these years, to get a group of congressmen together. It's like when you have a bully in the schoolyard, you know the bully, when he goes against one person, they're going to be intimidated. They're ganging up. They want to know who else is on board. Lord Monckton, I want to move on here. We have a whole bunch of callers. They're lining up right now. Mark, I'm going to go to you next. Right now, I'd like to go to Randy from the News Blaze. He is our Washington, D.C. insider contact. Go ahead, Randy. You're on with Lord Monckton.
Lord Monckton, it's quite an honor to interview you and hear you've done quite a great deal of work with climate change and understanding that that's a fraud and being able to understand the linkage between the two issues. I've been the only reporter in Washington to ever ask a question about this issue. So I have some questions for you. First off, when you go around London and discuss this issue right now, what are people in the UK saying to you about the birth certificate when you go into places around London?
The honest thing is it hasn't really appeared on their radar because there has been zero coverage. I mean, almost entirely zero coverage in the British press. And most people don't really know this has happened at all. The sheriff's press conference was seen by a few. I only got to see it by accident. Somebody who was writing to me about the climate said, oh, by the way, have you seen this sheriff in Arizona who reckons Obama's birth certificate is forged? And I thought it would be good for a laugh to have a look at the video. Within about 2 minutes, I realized this was serious and couldn't understand why the press were behaving as badly as they did in that press conference. They were giving the sheriff a very hard time. They were not asking any of the right questions that somebody genuinely wishing to get to the truth would ask. And I realized then, as I had with the climate issue, that what has happened here is an enormous diversion from the truth, an enormous going away from common sense and reality, particularly on the part of the left. They have now politicized everything so much that many of them are genuinely incapable of distinguishing truth from falsehood. And there is no more evil state of mind than that, putting it very bluntly. And that's not to say any individual person is evil, but that characteristic of being simply unable to distinguish between truth and falsehood. Simply to take a priori, a position that says we are right, everybody else is wrong, and no discussion is permitted. The science is settled. Obama is president. Whatever it is, they will not debate these issues because they cannot. They can only see one side of the question. This is a very, very dangerous moment for Western civilization. Because what it shows is that the left has caused an enormous intellectual rotting of the system, which is why even in London, you know, I'm about to give lunch to one of the journalists in London who might be interested in looking further at this. But I suspect he will tell me that he doesn't dare touch this because, you know, his advertisers will be got at by the left. You know, they'll mount huge campaigns against him. And that's what the left do now. So you've been very brave to stand out and ask questions about this in Washington, just about the only member of the press corps to do so.
My friend Alan and I, and from here in Australia. My next question, do you think the idea floated by Peter Boyles and KUNS in Denver to have a symposium of the experts on this issue get together, What effect do you think that would have if we could get the experts together? He's floated this idea. What do you think?
The advantage of doing that is we've done this quite a lot in the climate. In fact, I'm going to one in Las Vegas, the Heartland Climate Conference, which is coming up in July, on July the 17th. Very important that people who are interested in the climate should get to that. These are very useful ways of exchanging ideas among ourselves and getting everybody up to speed. The sheriff has done quite a bit of this with his fellow sheriffs, with the Sheriff's Association. And privately, many of them realize that there is something desperately wrong here. But their hands are all tied unless and until we liberate them. And we liberate them by giving them the information we've already got. Well, there's quite a lot of it, and it's very compelling. And we say to them, please investigate. We require it of you as citizens. And you do this all over America. That's the fastest way to get action, because then you've got 100 different police departments all being challenged to investigate this. And none of them can say, oh, but it's already being investigated in Arizona, because clearly it's been investigated in Arizona and nothing's happening. So now, you know, you're free to go to other jurisdictions and say, look, this needs to be separately looked at again, because for some reason it's been run into the sand down there. Perhaps it's political, we don't know. But either way, we've now got to get on with this, and please will you investigate. Then if you've got 100 different sheriff's departments all looking at this, even if 95 of them are corrupt, and one of the other five is actually good at his job as well, that one is going to crack this case. That's the most useful thing to do. That's not to say that one shouldn't also have a symposium where the experts can exchange ideas, but you do need to get real experts. I've been looking at quite a lot of the material that I've seen, some of it even in the sheriff's office had found its way in there, that actually wasn't, in my view, very expert. No names, no pack drill. But it was below the standard that I would have regarded as acceptable in a major fraud investigation of this kind. So it has to be that the material that's exchanged at these symposia should be of the very highest quality, and the debate should be at the very highest level. There's got to be no politics in this at all. And if that can be achieved, then Mr. Boyles' suggestion is a good one.
All right.
I have to move on, Randy. I'm loaded up with calls tonight, Randy.
Okay. All right. Thank you much. All right.
Okay. Nice to hear you.
Thanks.
Hey, Randy, how can people get a hold of you, Randy?
Sure. They can get a hold of us through newsblaze.com at our website, and contact us through our publisher, Alan, and everything, and it's right all out there on that website. And leave us a tip or leave us a comment. We could use your support. Basically, contact our sales department and help us out. So we greatly appreciate it. So
thank you very much, Randy.
Thank you much. All right, have a good night.
Thank
good
you.
Night.
Okay, newsblaze.com. I have a link on my website. I'm going to move on here. I have a lot of callers here that like to speak to you, Lord Monckton. And once again, you're correct about the amount of money that the government is able to throw at this problem. The only problem with that is they didn't count on the average American person standing up and saying, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. Okay, Gary, hold on. Darlene, I promise, Darlene from Florida, I will get to you in a minute. Okay, Lord Monckton, we spoke the other night for quite a long time, and you were suggesting about governors of individual states getting together and trying to form either a committee or standing up together about this. And I have here on hold, I'm going to bring him on right now, he's Mark McFarland. He's running for the office of governor in the state of Michigan. And this is one of the few people that we were speaking about that has the guts to stand up, and he possibly could make a difference if he got into office. Mark, welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, you're on the air.
Hello,
with
Mark.
Yes, I would first start to be I would like to begin by saying that I laud Lord Monckton's intellect. I've been listening this entire time, and he seems to be right on as far as the legal issues. My question is, I have a couple questions. I am an investigator in Michigan, a licensed private investigator. And under that statute, it's Act 285 of 1965 in Michigan, it states that crimes or wrongs done or threatened against the United States or a state or territory of the United States or any other person or legal entity. Now, that means that as an investigator, I can investigate crimes or wrongs done against the United States. So I have that jurisdiction. So my question is, DeLord, is this. Could I bring to a federal district court and request of them sort of like a writ of mandamus?
Very interesting question, and afraid not being an American lawyer, indeed not being any kind of lawyer, I can't give you a definitive answer, but I can give you some pointers. In the United Kingdom, I'm about to take advantage of this, there is an Act of Parliament called the Justices of the Peace Act 1361. And that Act of Parliament provides for what the job of the judges is. And it says that it is to keep the peace, that's the main thing, and to hear allegations of crimes, make sure they're investigated, and generally make sure that nothing goes too far amiss in each county. And when the police refuse to handle a prosecution in England and Wales, though interestingly not in Scotland, which is a medieval jurisdiction, criminally speaking, we have the right in England and Wales to go and mount a private prosecution ourselves. And we can be the prosecutor. So if Mr. Obama had tried this on in England and Wales, somebody by now, a Donald Trump, would have gone to court and prosecuted him privately, even if the public authorities had not had prosecuted him through the usual route. Now, this is a very powerful right which your Supreme Court took away from your citizens. You used to have that right, but it was taken away by the Supreme Court, which is increasingly becoming an engine of dictatorship and diminishing democracy with almost every decision it takes. It's been a long process, but definitely I'm worried by that. What you can, however, do, and it goes right back to this Act of 1361, which is at least of highly persuasive authority, given that that's where the first founding fathers of the United States came from, was this country. I think you do have the right to go in front of any judge. You make an appointment with the clerk of the court, say, look, I've got something, I want to draw the attention of a judge, I can't get the police to investigate it, and I think it's wrong, and please will you help? I am, interestingly, about to do this in Reading shortly, in England, where a crime was committed to do with the climate. I won't go into names or anything, obviously. The Serious Fraud Office has now written back saying it refuses to investigate. The Ordinary Fraud Police have failed to get back to me on being sent details of it. And so now it is my right either to mount a prosecution myself or to do what you should always do first, which is just go to the magistrates, say, Houston, we have a problem, and please will you tell the police they must investigate, because any magistrate has the power to do that. Now, I think that much of it, even though you couldn't go on as I could and mount a private prosecution, you can go before any judge and say in the Federal District Court and say, look, here's the material. Again, it has to be terribly well organized. You cannot waste their time with the sort of stuff, some of the stuff you've got in that sheriff's kit. I'm being a bit rude here, but it is true. You've got to go with really, really good documentation, beautifully presented. I can help with that. So that then when the judge looks at it, he can't just say, this is rubbish, as he could with just about all the filings I've seen in all the civil cases, and I've read most of them. He would have to say, yes, there is something here that requires investigation. I am astonished that it hasn't been investigated, and I will order the police that they are to investigate it. And then the police have got to investigate it, and there's no way they can shut it down with the judge watching. So I think what you do is you don't go to the court and try and mount an action yourself. That you don't have the power to do in the United States, a criminal action. It's outrageous that you don't, but you don't have that power. That is one of the ways in which this particular instance of corruption has been so successful. It exploits the fact that outraged citizens, as every citizen is who's looked at the documentation, that outraged citizens can't go and mount a private prosecution when all the public prosecutors, for exactly the same reason as Congress, actually, they're all in a state of funk because they're terrified of what the left will do to them if they are seen to be the ones that act. So yes, you should, once the case has been properly marshalled, take it, make an appointment to see your local federal district court, and say, I'm laying an information, that's the magic phrase, laying an information in front of the court, that a criminal offence has been committed, that I have tried to get the police authorities to investigate, I've tried to get the DA to do it, I've tried to get the State Attorney General to do it, none of them will look at it. But I think there's something wrong. Will you, as a judge, please look at this? I'm not trying to play politics, I'm trying to get to the bottom of this, and will you tell me, in all conscience, that the material I present to you is such rubbish that it doesn't deserve any form of investigation? If you will reassure me of that and explain why, I'll go away. If, on the other hand, you say, this is an outrage, will you, O judge, please order the public authorities to investigate this matter? That much I'm reasonably sure you have the power to do. But that's the question I would ask. I would try and track down an attorney who can give you a bit of friendly advice over a pint of beer and ask him whether you have in the United States the power to do what I've just suggested. You can't prosecute, I know that much, but you can go to the judge and say, please will he tell the police to investigate? That's the route to go.
I think a key piece of evidence is the birth certificate that was placed on the White House website.
Definitely. But it's not just the piece of paper. You need to have the analysis that goes with it.
Yes, we have international
experts.
You
can't just show that to a judge and say it's a forgery, isn't it? You say, I can't see anything wrong with it. Superficially, it looks fine. It's only when you start examining it that it all falls apart. So you need, you know, in presenting the documentation to the judge, this has to be a really well-organized file. And, you know, normally you would go to a firm of lawyers to do this for you because they know how to put these files together. I know how to put these files together, and I am working with Mike Verlin on this at the moment, and we're going to see whether I should, you know, take a month of my time and just sit down with a bucket over my head and put it together so that everybody, including you, can have the same set of really good, effective documentation that no police department could turn down flat and no judge could turn down flat. Armed with that document, then, and it'll be quite a big file by now, then you can go to a judge, and the judge will have to take you seriously, as indeed any police department would, any police precinct, once the documentation is in good order. It just needs to be systematically put together. That was the first thing I said to the sheriff when I saw him 2 years ago. I said, well, where is your statement of case? And there wasn't one. They hadn't actually sat down and written a summary of where they'd got to. So I said, right, I'll do it. And I then did that. And so they've got a 20-page document from me which sets out the story. They can now give that to anybody who wants to get up to speed on the case. It gets the main points across. But what now needs to be done is a proper indexed bundle of all the documents of the sort that lawyers and judges and investigating authorities are used to dealing with. It has to be done in the form they're used to following, for good reason. And that is that this is a matter of enormous seriousness. There is the possibility, and I put it no higher than that, that Mr. Obama isn't entitled to be where he is, that that document is a forgery, that he wasn't, therefore, born in the United States, that precisely because he has himself attested to the fact that this is his birth certificate, when whatever else it is, it plainly isn't that, may well mean that he is himself implicated in this. You need to know more about the criminal law in the United States than I do to pronounce on that. But certainly, this is plainly a matter of the very highest constitutional importance. And I think that it can't go on being treated by the people who are raising questions about this as a joke. It has to be taken more seriously. The work has to be done, and it has to be done properly to a very high standard of diligence and organization. And only then should anyone think of going near a police precinct or a judge. That would be my advice.
Let me ask you one other question, if you can weigh in on this. In 1961, Kenya was under British rule. That's true, right?
Well, it was a protectorate. It had a rather strange status. It was half under British rule and half not.
Okay. Obama's father was not a U.S. citizen. He wasn't even an immigrant to the U.S. He was a student in the U.S.
Yes.
Right? Okay, his mother was a U.S. citizen, and under the law at that time, would that make Barack Obama a dual citizen?
Now, that would depend, again, on the detailed immigration laws of the state of Hawaii and of Kenya. And because there were two different governmental systems running in parallel in Kenya at the time, I certainly couldn't pronounce on that. I think the point is that if you're asking that with a foreign father, could he possibly be regarded, even if he had been born in the United States, as a natural-born citizen? I'm satisfied on having read the Happersett case, which I think was 1878 or thereby, that given that nobody has pronounced that a person with one foreign parent, but nevertheless born within the jurisdiction, isn't a natural-born citizen, I think we would have to assume that on that ground he is a natural-born citizen if he was born in the United States. If he wasn't born in the United States or under United States jurisdiction, a foreign embassy or somewhere like that, then he isn't a natural-born citizen. So that is the test. The test is, where was he born?
Okay.
And all that I can say about that, because I've had a look at the records, Jerry Corsi came over from WND and we went and faffed around in the archives at Kew, the government archives here, to see whether we could find any reference, and of course we couldn't. I did tell Jerry that even if there had been one, Mr. Obama's friends would have gone in and cleaned it up long ago, so it wasn't still there. But we went and looked just in case, and we didn't find anything. So if he was not born within the jurisdiction of the United States, he is not a natural-born citizen under your Constitution, is not entitled to be president. It's really very plain. As to the more complex question of whether he's a dual citizen or not, there you have to look at what his own citizenship history, because for a time he and his mother went to live, I think, in Indonesia, where he was registered as an Indonesian citizen at a time when Indonesia didn't allow dual citizenship, and he therefore certainly was not a U.S. citizen at that time, and as far as I know has taken none of the formal steps necessary since to establish himself as an American citizen. But the requirement under the Constitution is that he be a natural-born citizen. He could have been born in the United States, then lost his citizenship, but still, because he was born here, he could argue, and I think the point has never come up, so nobody could say he was wrong, that he's still a natural-born citizen. So I don't think we could have found too much on any of that.
But
hey, Mark,
I got to move on with this, Mark. Okay.
I appreciate it, Mark. I have a lot of calls tonight. My switchboard's on fire. Mark,
right,
how do people get a hold of you, and what's your website?
MarkMcFarland.com. That's our website. They can go to that website, and it's all right there.
Okay, MarkMcFarland.com. Mark, thank you very much for the call, Mark.
Thanks, Mark, for having. Thank you.
We're on fire here, Lord Monckton. I'm going to jump over here to Darlene from Florida, who wants to ask you a question. Darlene, you're on the air with Lord Monckton.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it. There's been a lot, I mean, just a plethora of information that the Lord has put forth out here about how to do certain things. So my first question, and you can answer it off the air if you'd like, is where can someone who's just, a regular person find an outline of steps to follow? And then the second thing is, because it was a lot of information, the second thing is why should I expect results if I do the things that he's outlined, which sounds very reasonable? Why should I expect results if all these famous, experienced people haven't been able to make a difference all this time? You know, my grandmother, or great-grandmother, I'm sorry, was from Ireland, and, she used to read this or tell us the legend of Runny Nose. And basically what it is, you can't sit and it's kind of like beating a dead horse. So why should I expect to have any different, make any difference if people like the Lord and all of the other people who have done a lot of work haven't been able to make any progress? So those were my two questions.
Two excellent questions. Now, the first of your questions was how do you find out what steps to take? The answer to that is that I'm now going to work with Mike Volin and Gary Laconis and various other people to put together, first of all, this very important packet of papers that tells the story in due legal form with all the affidavits and properly sworn stuff, so that it's all there for a police department or a judge or anyone to act upon. Nobody has ever done this. I don't think even the sheriff's done it. It's never been done. It should have been done. So that's, and I will do that, and that's going to take probably a month from once I start doing it. I'm, you know, somebody's going to need to pay for my time so that I can do it. But that is the first thing to do. Now, once I've done that, I will also be working with lawyers in the United States, because I'm not a United States lawyer, to outline very carefully on a sort of one-page plain man's guide the steps which a citizen should take to draw this to the attention of the public authorities by going to his police precinct and handing over the file and saying, I think an offence has been committed, I and the others with me want to make a complaint. And there's a due form in which you do this in the States, and as long as you follow that due form, the police are then pretty much bound to investigate as long as it's clear the thing isn't political and that it is a serious criminal matter and not just people making stuff up. That's where this big file comes in. So that's the steps you take, and that's how you will know what steps to take. It will take a bit of time. This should have been done ages ago. It's now time we did it. And so Mike is going to work on making sure that you know, that I get on with this and am compensated for the enormous amount of time it's going to take. And I'll then come over to the States and you know, perch in somebody's house and work there so I can get to the lawyers and do everything on the spot. And we'll do it right. That's the first thing. Now, once that material is available, Mike will be letting all his team know, and indeed all the other groups that have been working on this very diligently for many years. I mean, it's a very gallant thing you've all been doing. They will all have access to this material. They will all be able to use it. And then you say, why should little old John Q. Citizen or Jane Q. Citizen like yourself, why should anyone listen to you if they haven't listened to me? Well, the first thing is, I'm not a U.S. citizen. I have no standing to make any complaints about this to any authorities at all. So I can't do anything about this. All I can do is advise those who invite me to advise them. That's how I got involved in this. I was asked to go to Hawaii. I was asked to meet some lawyers there. I was then asked to do some investigation and do a report for them, which has been put in front of the courts in Hawaii. And the courts in Hawaii are fairly horrified by what they've seen. They now know there's a real problem here. And they, you know, everybody is beginning to wonder how much longer this can be kept under wraps. And here's the thing. Here's how little Jane Q. Citizen can make a difference. Because she may, just by chance, once you've got this material and you follow the instructions for how to make a criminal complaint, and you get some fellow citizens around you, don't do it on your own, you go in mob-handed, you know, a dozen of you or 200 of you even, and you go into your police precinct, you make an appointment, you see the detectives, and you say, here's the material. And then there'll be a summary at the top of the material that you can take them through so that they, even if they don't open it, you can tell them the main points. And you then say, I'm making this complaint, and all of that, you know, the lawyers will tell me exactly how, what magic words you say to make sure they have to investigate it. Here's the thing. You may, without knowing it, have run into the one police precinct where the police officers are all honest. They will all honor their oath, because they all take an oath as police officers in the States, that they will investigate any crime that is credibly alleged in front of them. They are bound to investigate it. They can't just say, oh, I can't be bothered, or I vote Democrat and I'm not going to. If this is properly put to them in a non-political way, with authoritative documentation and a sensible presentation, through the usual route for making a criminal complaint, it will be dealt with. And you may be the one who chooses the police precinct that just happens to be the one that is honest, determined. Somebody in there realizes the enormous damage to the body politic that arises if open public corruption right at the heart of the White House website is allowed to continue uninvestigated. It only takes one, and it could be that it's you that finds that one policeman. That's why it works, because there'll be hundreds of you, even thousands of you, all with this same excellent documentation, going all over the country to different police precincts. The left can't handle that. They can't stop them all. Somebody is going to investigate this, and when they do, it will unravel. And you could be the one to do that.
Darlene, thank you very much. Darlene,
thank
go
you
to
my
website.
My call.
Go to my website, hit the contact me button, say, hi, this is Darlene. I'll put you in
okay.
my email or book. And this way you get constant updates. And everybody listening tonight, do the same. contact me. It's mike@wheresobamasbirthcertificate.com, or just go to the website, hit the contact me button. I also have my phone number there. Thanks a lot, Darlene. I'm going to move on. Okay, if you're just tuning in, and a lot of people are tuning in right now, this is Mike Volin from wheresobamasbirthcertificate.com. With me here is Lord Monckton offering his perspective, and he's also promised to help with the sheriff kits. Don't panic. I know a lot of you in the chat room saying the sheriff kits are going to disappear. No, they're going to be enhanced and they're going to be gone over. Okay, I'm going to take a few more callers here. Please, callers, I can only give you about 3 minutes because we are running short of time and the switchboard is on fire. With that, Lord Monckton, I believe you know this next caller. And Gary, I'm having trouble with my switchboard here, if you cooperate. Gary Wilmot, you're on the air. Keep it short, Gary, please.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Lord Monckton, thank you very much for the great experience we had almost 2 years to this very day. If you'll remember, you came out to Moorpark, California, and you gave a wonderful presentation on the birth certificate. And then you put the cherry on the top. You did a wonderful presentation on the global warming situation. And you'll remember that I took you up to the Reagan Library before you gave your presentation.
That was an enormous honor, I must say, because I was a huge admirer of Ron Reagan, worked with him and his administration when I was at No. 10 Downing Street working for Margaret Thatcher, and used to go across to the, in fact, at one point, the Foreign Office and the State Department when no speaks. I think it was to do with some sort of dispute over trade. And so when Margaret wanted anything done, she would just say to whoever was handy, on one occasion it was me, go over and see Ron Reagan and sort it out. I found myself in the White House. He was a lovely man, so it was a great honor that you took me up to see the Reagan Library, a very beautiful place.
And we stood by the Reagan gravesite, and I took some pictures. I don't recall. Did you ever get pictures? Did Gary Lacanis ever get them to you, or Tom Ballantyne?
I think he did. They'll be in my folder somewhere. I have so many pictures of myself that I need a vanity wall, really.
Well, I'll try to email some to you. Anyway, I'd just like to make a few comments. I've been on hold since the beginning of the program. Just a few topics. The symposium may be a great idea. I listen to Peter Boyles all the time, but I don't think it really makes any headway unless it's reported widely in the media.
It won't be reported. That's the trouble with that. It won't be reported.
Yeah, exactly.
The media won't touch this yet.
Right. I'm a little confused. I don't want to throw water. I think you've said a lot of really sensible things, and I want to reiterate what Pastor Manning said. We're very honored that you've taken an interest in us over on this side of the pond, and you realize the importance that we preserve the principles of the Founding Fathers, because we are the beacon of freedom for the world, and if we fail, the world is going to fall. But I want to also make a point. I just made a few quick notes. Getting back to what Mark said, and the follow-up conversation, the fact of the matter is some of the conversation that followed, there was an assumption that we know who Obama's father is and who his mother is, and we don't. We do not know definitively whether the Kenyan is his father, and I don't believe he is, and we're making an assumption that the woman from Kansas is his mother, and we don't know that.
Well, here's the thing.
There is a statute back there in the early 60s where she was too young to confer citizenship.
The other issue that I had is
that it sounds like you're saying natural born citizen is based on birth only in the territory of the United States, and it seems to me that we've been studying this carefully, and it really hinges on the citizenship of both parents. That's the primary thing. Hapaset rules that out.
No, you can't go there. A lot of people I know in the what I might call the irredentist extreme birther movement have tried to say that that's the case. It isn't. The fact is that if one of his parents was American and he was born on U.S. soil, then he counts as a natural born citizen even if his other parent wasn't American. The Hapaset case specifically refused to go anywhere near saying that somebody with one foreign parent wasn't a natural-born citizen, and that's the precedent, and it's a Supreme Court case. There's no argument about it. So, no, you can't have that one. On the other point about the parentage and whether we know who Mr. Obama's parents were, no, I have no idea who his parents are. and it may be Stanley Ann Dunham was, maybe she wasn't. One thing that's very puzzling in all this is that when the sheriff's people got in touch with the National Archives to get hold of the INS records of who had flown in and out of Hawaii during the period around Obama's birth, they were given the complete INS files. Every single person that came in and out of Hawaii had a card on that index, which was then microfilmed and stored at the National Archives. And the entire year's documents were there, except for 3 days
right.
before the date of Obama's birth, the date of his birth, and 3 days
right.
afterwards. So I think that also is a very puzzling, that reeks, does that? I mean, it's that,
well,
there are so many points
let,
like
let me,
that.
Let me
you put them
interject
all together.
One other thing.
So
you
the
did
point
a pure,
is, on this matter, let me finish, on this point of the parentage, if you're talking of mounting a criminal case, because we don't know who his parents were, and therefore we don't know who they were not, there isn't a basis yet for mounting a criminal case or even for mounting a criminal investigation of that aspect. Where one starts, and we really got to start here and stick very firmly with that, is that the document on the White House website, regardless of who his parents were or where he was born, that document is a forgery of a public document. It has been put there for a particular public purpose to try to reassure us that Mr. Obama is entitled to hold the office of president. It therefore is an important document and therefore a very important forgery. That is where the focus has to be at this stage. One can get into all sorts of interesting questions about citizenship and parentage and DNA, and but if you don't focus it, you'll lose. What we have to focus on is that that document is a forgery. There is no doubt that it is a forgery. I have looked at many forged documents in my time, some of them very clever. This wasn't a very clever one. I have a pretty good idea of why it wasn't a very clever one. I think it was produced in great haste. That's another story, which I may have time to tell later on in this program, but not now. So the point is, we must focus on getting that bogus document investigated, because, as the sheriff has rightly put it, whatever else one may say about this case, the one thing that is clear to him, and it is equally clear to me, is that that document is a forgery, and that therefore a crime has been committed. We don't yet know by whom, but we know that it has been committed, and we know that if we could get a look at the original documentation, we will be able to work out, or rather confirm, because I think I know who committed it, we'll be able to confirm who committed it, and then that person and those associated with that person can be locked up for a very, very, very long time.
Lord
Gary,
Martin, in June of 2012, you did a peers briefing paper, and
yes.
I personally and my two boys and a number of other people, such as Gary Lacanis, helped get those packages together and get them over to Congress. How does that paper differ from what you want to do now? Because Congress also saw
that. Remember I said earlier in the program that I was surprised when I went to see the sheriff, there was no document that summarized the state of the investigation to date. It's something that every police officer would normally keep, and they hadn't done it for some reason. And so I did it, so that there was such a thing. And I said to Gary Lacanis, look, get this out to everybody so that then, when this eventually does unfold, nobody can get away with saying they weren't told. It went to every state Supreme Court judge. It went to every state's attorney general. It went to every congressman. It went to every senator. It went to every major investigating organization. Heads are going to roll right across the public sector in the United States when this story eventually breaks, because that document was sent out when it was, and nobody did anything about it.
Hey,
and
Gary,
that's the purpose
Gary,
of that document.
I have to move on, Gary. Why don't you give out your website real quick, please?
Okay, give us liberty1776.blogspot.com. And for anybody that's in Southern California, on June 14th, Saturday, 11:30 to 2:30 at Angel Stadium in Anaheim, University of California, Irvine commencement, the usurper, the fraud in chief, is going to be there speaking to the graduating class, and we're having a demonstration there, and we invite anybody in Southern California, Nevada, or Arizona to get on over there and help us out.
Thank you very much.
And one quick answer to your question, Gary, what we are going to do is put together the full dossier of papers properly indexed, a much
right.
more substantial document than the peers briefing. That's what the police will need.
Okay, thank you,
Gary.
It's
a very different document.
Lord Monckton, did I hear you say that you have your suspicions on who forged the document?
I'm pretty sure I know who forged the document, yes.
Well, thank you for clearing that up. We'll have to have another show on that. Okay, I have to move quickly. We have tons of callers here. This is one of the biggest shows I've had. Johnny from Florida, I can only give you one question and 1 minute, Johnny. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Mike. How you doing? Hi, Lord Monckton. Pleasure to speak with you. I was just curious why, if Sheriff Joe is having trouble with the Attorney General there, why he has not been recalled by the people, because he is an elected public servant, and why hasn't the Deputy Attorney General stepped in, and if he doesn't do it, have him removed?
Well, in an ideal world, that's maybe what should happen. In the real world of politics, it isn't quite that easy. You see, it's very easy for the Attorney General to say that in view of the importance of the case, and I understand this is what he did say, that in view of the importance of this case, unless there is absolute definitive proof that this document is a forgery, I'm not even prepared to have the matter aired in a public court under my authority. And he can get away with that. He can say that in his judgment he thought that was the right thing to do, and nobody can recall him for that. I think it's a cop-out, but unfortunately he can just about justify that legally speaking. However, this is where my report on the mathematics comes in, which is going to form quite an important part of this dossier of papers that needs to be put together. And this report on the mathematics wasn't available at the time I did the Peers briefing, which was my original public document on this. And what this does is to take all the indications that there's something wrong, assign probabilities to them, multiply them together to get the overall probability that the document could possibly be genuine. Now that, to a mathematician, is as good as absolute proof, provided that the probabilities come out as, in fact, they do. And that is something the Attorney General may not have understood. Indeed, the sheriff himself may not have understood it. It took me quite a long time to explain it to his people. And they may not have fully grasped that, in fact, in that affidavit, particularly if it's backed up by a professor of mathematics, they have the absolute proof they need, or the proof that is so close to absolute that no federal district court, on looking at that documentation, would say this was a frivolous matter or that not enough material had been brought before it to allow it to make that determination. I just think they've misunderstood the importance of that mathematical evidence, which is extremely clear. It's very carefully done.
Johnny,
the professor of mathematics said it was clearly done. That's the way forward. We need to produce this proper documentation and then make sure that no other state's attorney general is allowed to get away with saying, as I think the one in Arizona did, well, there isn't really enough here to justify any further action. There unquestionably is, and that's why we've got to bring other state's attorneys general into the picture.
Johnny, thanks for the call, Johnny. We have 27 minutes left in the show. I'm going to go quickly to Ed. Ed in Texas, please, Ed, keep it to a minute, please. I have so many callers, Ed. You're on the air.
I'll do it. Lord Monckton, I want to thank you very much for what you've been doing. I really do appreciate that. And I'd be really interested in seeing what you come up with here. Myself and a few other guys filed voter fraud charges against the DNC chair here in Texas with the Texas Attorney General. They said it needed to go to the Secretary of State, took it to the Secretary of State. They said you need to take it to the Attorney General. So clearly prosecution on voter fraud or against the opposite party is a political thing. Anyway, like I said, I'll be looking forward to whatever you guys come up with because I haven't accepted defeat on that. I want to continue on in that vein. But I'd also like to find out if you are privy to any of the new charges that the sheriff has come up with regard to Barack Obama criminal activity.
No, the deal I've always had with the sheriff is that I don't get told anything that isn't in the public domain. And the reason for this is that he has to be very careful that if this does eventually lead to a prosecution, the other side then turns around and says, but you were playing politics with Monckton, who isn't even an American citizen. You were telling him things that you should have been telling the courts or you should have been telling us, and you told him first, and that's not right. So I've been very carefully and very correctly kept out of the inner loop I don't know, and I made a point of this earlier in the program, I don't know anything that hasn't been made publicly available. I know it in perhaps more detail than most because I've been able to go back and look at some of the source documents, not in the sheriff's office but elsewhere, that I've been able to track down. But no, I don't have any knowledge of what he's going to do next. What I understand from such inquiries as I have been able to make is that actually the inquiries he's making now are not specifically on the issue of the birth certificate. They arose
right.
out of that. They arose out of that
right.
inquiry. They may be linked to voter fraud. That is one of the things that has cropped up as a result of this inquiry, the sheer scale on which the Democrats have been practicing voter fraud. Is enormous, and
exactly.
that is something that may come to light as a result of all this.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay,
are we still
thanks here? Very much. Yes, thank you very much. We had a little bit of a delay there. Thanks, Ed. I want to take a question from the chat room from Commander Kirshner. Are you familiar with the Selective Service Registration forgery?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to go to, we have a switchboard that's on fire. I didn't expect this tonight. Pam, I can only give you 1 minute, Pam. Do you have a question?
Yeah, there's a couple of things on that. First of all, why can't they – everything's a hodgepodge here. And there's so many issues that are red flags. I mean, the birth certificate, the selective service, the sealed school records. I mean, why can't they all be combined together into – and letting a judge see it, for one thing. And secondly – all this has been set in front of the so many senators, so many representatives, and according to this 18 U.S. Code 2382, it says simply, very simply, if you have knowledge. It doesn't say you have to have it in this form, but if you have knowledge of this, it's misprisent of treason if you don't present it in front of the proper authorities. You know, I mean, it's very simple.
I think you're quite right about that, and I'm very glad that still in the United States the offense of misprision of treason exists. It was repealed off our statute book, I think in 1967, but you still have it in the United States, and it means that if you come across something that may be treason and you don't report it, then you are as guilty of the treason as those who did the treason.
So that would be our senators and our representatives and every single person who has this information, because it doesn't say we need it in a special form. All it says here, and I have it right in front of my face, is that they have the knowledge. So I have given the knowledge to Paul Ryan. I have given it to Ron Johnson. I had them sign it off in their office, and I'm still trying to have a meeting with them, but it doesn't matter because I had them sign it off. So they have the knowledge. So then they're in
violation
of this code.
That's right. I think what's going to happen is this. I don't think that this is going to be got away with because you just listen to the calls that we've had tonight. People in the United States are concerned for their country. It's not so much they want to bring the president down because he belongs to a different party. They realize that the body politic as a whole suffers if you allow open public corruption of this kind. And that is what the senators and the congressmen and the attorneys general and the judges and everybody else are doing, and indeed the investigating authorities. I mean,
exactly.
I was with Gary Laconis in Washington when he rang the Secret Service and said, look, you may be guarding the wrong man. You know, there's a lot of evidence that this is irregular. Can we please give you the evidence or post it to you or whatever? And they were terribly excited initially. They said, oh, yes, we'll come and see you straight away. And then they didn't come and didn't come and didn't come. And somebody had got to them in the meantime. Now, what's going to happen is that the Secret Service, which has been told in writing about this and hasn't acted, is going to be shut down and abolished when this story comes out. The same goes for the FBI. And a lot of senators and a lot of congressmen whom we can prove were told of this matter and did not act will all face charges for effectively conspiracy to allow this to continue. But not until we can get the initial central matter dealt with.
And then what about combining them all? I mean, there's so many issues.
This will only happen like a house of cards. You have to pull one card down, then the rest collapse. You have to establish by proof that the document is forged. That has to be done in a court of law so that a conviction is secure. The moment that happens, it'll all come tumbling down like a house of cards, and then we can clean out the entire stables. The FBI head will go, the head of the Secret Service will go, many congressmen and senators will go, many police chiefs, many state attorney generals, many judges will go, because on being given this material in a serious form, they failed to respond. And
Don't
forget, Pam, don't forget the amount of sheriff kits that's out there, not only with Congress, Senate, police officers and the courts. When this breaks, they all have copies, they all knew about it, and they're all going to be running to their desk drawers to pull the sheriff kits out to wave in front of a microphone and say that we've been listening. Pam, thanks for the call. Obviously, Lord Monckton, the passions run high here. I'm going to continue with the calls. And I thought I had Mickey Booth on here, and I guess she dropped out. Okay, with that, I am going to go. Jeff, hold on. I'm going to get to you next, and I'm going to go to David from Virginia. You're on the air with Lord Monckton.
Lord Monckton and Mike, it's a pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much. Frankly, Lord Monckton, I've been working, and I'm currently physically right now with two other individuals from various places around the country who've been working with Mike Brown around this issue, and this is just what we need. I think I've got more hope now after listening to your plan tonight. I personally even have delivered the current sheriff's kit to the general counsel of the House Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security. It's just amazing the amount of information that has been given out so far, and we have nothing done. I always like to point out when I talk about this issue as well, an interesting sequence of events, which is all supposition on my part. However, I think it's quite curious to point out that that birth certificate was released to the world on a Wednesday morning. The next Saturday evening was the White House Correspondents' Dinner, where all the CEOs of major networks were in attendance, half of Hollywood and Donald Trump, where he was reamed quite well by the president. And then we had the next day the capture or killing of bin Laden, and then 90 days later, Extortion 17, which was shot down in Afghanistan with the SEAL team that participated in that. All to me, very interesting contrivance of events. But I just wanted to call in and thank you so much. Such a pleasure to have you working on this. Thank you so much.
Well, that's a pleasure. Just very briefly on this before the next question, I'm going to say that what I think we're going to need to do is to put a little bit of money together to make all this happen. And I'm going to suggest to Mike Volin that he should set up on Indiegogo or one of these crowdfunding websites to get some cash in the kitty to do a proper job on this. We're going to need to get some legal advice. Once I've put the basic paperwork together, we're going to get some legal advice on how to make sure that this is effectively tabled in front of the public authorities. It's got to be done not by people handing paper bags over to their congressmen. It's got to be done by somebody going in, preferably with a lawyer in tow, and putting such a commanding set of documentation on the counter that the police cannot look the other way. That's going to be the trick. It's not a cheap thing to do, but now we need to raise the cash to do that. And so that's what I'm going to be proposing to Mike, and we'll talk to him about after the show about putting that together. Next question.
We have a slight delay here, Lord Monckton. I do have a thank you very much, David, for the call. I do have a donate button on my website, and people have been generous over the years because everything has come out of my pocket. We've distributed over thousands of sheriff kits. I lost track. Expenses to go to D.C., to feed people, to travel across the country. I was just in Dallas 2 days ago. I met with Gary Lekonis, and every single penny goes to the production of the kits, the cost to run the show, gasoline, travel expenses. I'm going to ask the audience again.
Yeah, we now have some considerable further expenses which are going to need to be raised separately to do this documentation properly, to get legal advice. It's no longer just driving around. We've got to do the work seriously. That takes money. There's been very little money on our side of the case. I'm conscious of that. We now need to go get some.
Okay. Thank Jeff, hold on, Jeff. I'm going to get next with that. I'm going to go to, this is Mickey Booth from MickeyBooth.com. Hi, Mickey. Welcome to the show. You're on with Lord Moncton.
Hi. Oh, thank you. Oh, gosh, I don't even know what to say. It's so good to listen to this show. A lot of great ideas, and really appreciate everything that you're doing. And I just want to say that I'm here to help in any way. You know, I'll be handing out the kits and doing everything that I can. I don't want to take up much time. I just wanted to say, I wanted to add on to what Pastor Manning had said earlier. There's this event coming up, July 4th, Gettysburg. We would be honored. It would be incredible if you could be there. There's David was just on, and he mentioned Extortion 17. You know, Obama gifted that helicopter crash, gifted all of those people to Al-Qaeda. And, you know, it was the biggest loss of Navy SEALs and military in the whole Afghanistan war. And I personally now know Charles Strange, Michael Strange's father. They are coming. They are going to be there at Gettysburg. And I went to Operation American Spring and made contact of all of these Tea Party people, you know, military, militia, and all of that, that are aware of the forgery but don't know the details about it. And so we have, it's like we've gotten, you know, whole new groups that are now, you know, understanding and into it and know about it, and they're on board. So
this, of course, is crucial, because as the word very slowly spreads, it eventually reaches critical mass, and suddenly it becomes impossible not to do something about it. So every contact of that kind is helpful.
Yes, and there's going to be, from the contacts that I made, Overpasses for America is a huge group, and they're on board, too. And they're going to direct people, you know, to come to this Gettysburg event. So I wanted to say I hope everybody will pass the word on. Please be there. Pastor Manning, you know, has been out there, you know, in leadership like so many others have, that just get, you know, just get trivialized and marginalized and shut down and called racist and called birthers and all of that. And I don't know, Lord Moncton, if you know that they call me, the left gave me the name, and I proudly wear it, the Birther Princess. and,
yes, I've heard of that. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I kind of lost touch with everybody because two times my email, you know, addresses have been hacked, and I lost my contacts. And I was in touch with Tom Ballantyne, and I haven't, you know, heard from him, and wanted to know, you know, if you're still in touch with him, to let him know that I'm still here, and please let everybody know that I'm here. Whatever I can do, you can call on me, and Mike knows that I will step up. Thank you so much.
That is marvelous. I think the next stage, now that we're going to start doing this professionally, is it's going to take money. And there's no substitute for that in the end. This has to be done right, and doing it right and getting the right lawyer's advice, because a lot of questions have been thrown at me this evening which really depend on quite a good knowledge of American constitutional law. I know bits of it, but it's not my subject. We need to find, I know who I would go to. I'd go to Edwin Vieira, who is a constitutional specialist, and he would be able to guide us through it. But this does now need to be done professionally, and the fact that the sheriff did it for so long under the amateur guise of the cold case posse, I think that's kind of given an amateur flavor to the whole thing, which is no longer, in my view, appropriate. The matter is too serious. Now we have to do it right. So I'm going to be getting in touch eventually with all of your groups and saying, look, you now need to raise some special funds to do this particular task of getting the dossier done, getting the legal advice, and then getting it into the hands of people who can go into their police departments mob-handed and demand that it be investigated properly.
Mickey, thank you very much. I could always rely on you to get the word out. I appreciate it. Jeff, I'm going to go to you next. You know, Lord Moncton, it was the cold case posse, and the sheriff had to had to live by a rule of law where he had he could not involve his sheriff's department with the cold case posse, and they relied strictly on donation money. And I think they did the best they could until they found out this criminal, whatever the criminal information they have now, which is now.
Oh, I'm not in any way criticizing the cold case posse. I'm saying that nevertheless, because it was in the hands of people who were thought to be amateurs, they're actually a lot more professional than the left have made them look. That therefore there's a feeling abroad that this can be handled in a kind of informal way, and now it's got to the stage where it's got to be done right, and that means raising everybody's game. In fact, on my reading of the law, the sheriff could and perhaps should, though I understand why he didn't, have gone straight for a proper investigation the moment his cold case posse said, actually, this does look serious and it really needs to be done properly. He could then have justified it, but of course the left were already on his case. The Justice Department trumped up a totally spurious investigation against him, which tied him down for months. And you know, the left then began going systematically about trashing his reputation, and it just made life easier for him not to have to argue with them about whether any taxpayers' money had been spent, because it hadn't. So I can quite understand where he was coming from, but it has slowed things down, and now we have to change gear.
Well, let's not forget, in my universe-shattering video produced by Pixel Patriot, thank you, Kevin, you could hear Mike Zullo say that they were supposed to be on Sean Hannity that very night of the news conference, and that Hannity had backed out. And then he goes on to elaborate more, saying that he was contacted by media execs and newscasters, and they were in fear for their job, told not to touch it. I think it would be a totally different ballgame right now if they had either Ben Hannity's show that night or the news media would have picked it up. And it's very sad to see that the media did not run with this. And obviously, we both know why. The major cover-up, it goes back to the money. Just throw
money.
Well,
there are two reasons.
Yes.
There are two reasons. One is the money, but the other is this fear of persecution by the left. I mean, very, very rapidly, the United States is becoming a police state run by the left for the left. And it is now able even to shut down Fox News. And they got rid of Glenn Beck because he sorted them out on the Acorn thing. They then went after his advertisers and had him taken off the air. They would have done the same to Sean Hannity if he had dared to mention this. And in the end, he was bullied into not mentioning it. And I've met him because he and I spoke together in front of 100,000 mine workers 3 or 4 years ago on Labor Day in West Virginia. And, you know, he's a very good man, and he is a very tough man as well. If he could have said anything about this, he would have done. But he was bullied and ordered in the end by the executives of Fox News not to touch it because they feared for the very survival of their station if he dared to do exactly what the station was created to do, which was to report without fear. And unfortunately now fear stalks the land. People are frightened of the left, frightened of this damage that unseen hands will do to their reputations. And this applies just as much to the media as it does to congressmen. It is a terrible indictment of America today that this has been allowed to come to this pass, but again, we've seen it before. This is how it felt. This is how it smelt in Nazi Germany just before the Nazis got absolute control. And afterwards, everybody went round saying, why didn't the people of Germany say anything at the time? They didn't say anything at the time for the same reason that Hannity didn't say anything. They were terrified out of their wits by the threat that their reputations and their businesses would be trashed by the Nazis if they did. And that's where we are now. You're in effectively a kind of Nazi government, which is busily shutting down all dissent by brute force and by lies and by threats and by bullying the reputations of the likes of me until people see what's been done to the likes of me and they say, I'm not going to take the same risks. And that's how they've done it. And somehow we have to fight back. And the way that you're doing it, by getting lots of groups from all over the country to stand together, and eventually to get congressmen to stand together so that it's no longer one of them that can be the focus of the hate campaign from the left, but lots of them, as the moment you reach that critical mass where there's enough people in the know, enough people not frightened of the reputation, enough people willing to speak out, suddenly the debate will change. And we're not far off that now.
No, and I have to agree. Okay, I have one more caller, and I only have 5 minutes left. This is Sergeant Jeffrey Glenn Harrison, United States Marine Corps, retired. Jeff, I only have literally 2 minutes for you, Jeff. Make it quick.
I definitely will. Thank you, Lord Monthly, for helping us out, because we do need you. And I want you to know that I'm with the Tea Party group out of here, Western Pennsylvania. I'm connected with other groups. We are also connected with other groups, and we will, upon getting your information, we will get it out. I'd like to just state one thing, and that this is not just an American problem. This is a constitutional problem, but it's also a worldwide problem, because, like they said, the way American goes, so does the world. And so, therefore, I would like to say that, and Mike Volvin's website there, we get a lot of hits from all over the world. People are getting this information. And so, therefore, I would like to say that, yes, if you guys have funds around the world there, please send them to Mike, because we need the funds. I'd like to say that, sir, do you know any other countries that have made statements about this, or in their media, or any other countries? I know that Israel did come out with a statement about this, the science and technology, and there's a doctor named Israel, H-A-N-U-K-O-G-L-U, who the state of Israel came out with a preliminary report. I emailed them. They emailed me back. I have some information on this. But we need also, we need the worldwide support on this. So how can we conjure up that, sir? That's all I got to say.
I think yes, it's a good question, sir. First of all, congratulations and thank you for your service to the freedom of the West. But the answer to your question is that this is, as far as other countries are concerned, an internal matter in the United States. It's none of our business, really. It's only I only got involved in it because I was asked to get involved in it. So it is something which you're going to have to sort out for yourselves. None of us is going to do it for you. I mean, I will help as far as I can, because I don't like to see this kind of dishonesty. I used to work for Margaret Thatcher. I used to shut it down wherever I found it then, made myself very unpopular with my colleagues and occasionally with her. But always, in the end, it turned out that I was right. You can't allow corruption of this kind in the body politic, or terrible damage is done. And so it is now time to stop this. You'll have to stop it yourselves internally. Nobody overseas will lift a finger to intervene, because they would regard this as a matter of your internal politics. It's your constitution. It's your provision that says he can't be president if he wasn't born in America. And if it's a forgery, then it's a forgery under your jurisdiction. And it's your courts that have to do it, your federal courts that have to sort this out. And that's why nobody overseas is going to say a word about this. I mean, certainly I would have expected some of the newspapers maybe to do the occasional story about it and review some of the evidence and say this is boiling up. They haven't even done that, again, because of it's not just in the States, but worldwide, the fear of the venom and hatred and retaliation of the left if you move against one of its heroes. That is now very widespread. It's a very serious, it's probably the most serious problem in politics today, is this unwillingness of people to stand up and face down the left and say boo to them and to hell with the damage to their reputations. Because we've all got into a kind of state of funk where we're just not willing to talk in a sensible but clear way, and not be threatened by the left. The left is slowly dominating by brute force, and that way lies exactly the kind of regime that Hitler eventually put in place. And if you think that sounds too extreme, and you start muttering the words Godwin's law, I know you wouldn't, but some would, let me say this. On several occasions, I have been told that the best thing that could happen to me is to be put on trial for high crimes against humanity, because I've dared to question the climate change storyline of the left, and that I should be hung for it. They want to kill their opponents, just as they wanted to kill their opponents in Nazi Germany, and they are increasingly openly and frequently saying so, just as they did in Nazi Germany. The left are evil.
We have 1 minute left. I appreciate you coming on tonight. Would you mind telling your audience, my audience, how they can contact you? And I will be in contact with you tomorrow.
Excellent.
Is there a is there a way people can contact you?
Contact me?
Yes.
Yes, indeed. The easiest way to get hold of me directly is monckton@mail.com, monckton@mail.com.
The show
that
went rather fast tonight. I had so many callers. Lord Monckton, I'd like to thank you for staying up late tonight. I'm going to speak for my audience, and America appreciates you, and I'd like to say God bless and good night, and we're about to end the show. I pushed it right to the very end. I'd like to thank all of my callers tonight. Where's Obama's birth certificate.com? Hit the contact me form. My phone number is right there in the middle of the site, 570-394-2570. Please help with the donate button. You heard Lord Monckton. We're going to get this thing moving. Not that it hasn't been moving, but we're going to push it. Everybody, I'd like to say thank you very much. Have a very good night, and I'd like to say thanks again, Lord Monckton.
God bless you, and God bless America.